Welcome to Packet Pushers, the greatest ever data networking podcast. Well, perhaps so far. Today, we are diving into disaggregation with our sponsor for today's show, Juniper Networks. And our guest is Guru Shenoy, Senior Director of Product Management. And we're going to get into the drivers of disaggregation, the rise of white box. And I guess the real story is here, how Juniper's approaching the transition in the industry of disaggregation. And then the second part of the business equation, which not everybody talks about, which is the rebundling. For every disaggregation, there is an equivalent rebundle of things. So, Guru, welcome to the podcast. To get us started, what's driving this move to separate the hardware and software, particularly amongst, say, service providers, cloud providers, and larger? What's driving us to make this major transition and change the way we work?
Sure. Thank you for having me, Greg and Drew. I'm really looking forward to this. So, I'll start with a few things that are playing into the drivers for disaggregation. You know, cost reduction has always been the key motivator, and that continues to be so. So the theory behind disaggregation is that if you decouple the components, hardware and software, and then you have multiple providers providing each of those, it fosters competition, there's more choice for consumers, and ultimately that reduces cost. And that's just economics, so it is true to some extent. However, I think, you know, if you just look at it as a pure cost play, then it's possible that you could be disappointed. So you have to run your numbers because it's not just about cost. There's a few other things that are important. And if you factor those in, then disaggregation and consuming it becomes far more interesting.
So for some people, disaggregation means better sparing because they can have a disparate types of hardware but run the same software across the top of that. And that makes holding spare parts much easier instead of relying on a third-party supplier for spares. And for some people, it means running the operating system that you want on the hardware that you want. So I think there's many ways to look at disaggregation. And I mean, I'm only picking two examples here, but there's much more than that, isn't there?
Absolutely. I mean, you mentioned it. Operational efficiency is a key part, right? Sparing, decoupling the supply chain for hardware from the supply chain, if I may, for software is a key driver. You know, just resiliency, speaking about operational efficiency, just resiliency in having multiple parts that are mix and match where you can just, let's say, even in a network, upgrade an individual module separate from others because it has been designed to plug and play with the other components is a key aspect as well. And then innovation and control is a huge driver, right? The whole idea is a lot of providers these days are not just looking at picking up cookie cutter systems from vendors and just deploying them, but they're looking to enhance them in ways that provide some differentiating value to their network or provide some kind of additional operational efficiencies. And so they're looking to bring in their own software modules maybe around telemetry, crypto algorithms, that's the secret sauce, et cetera. And the ability to do these kinds of things is very compelling as well. So if you look at it in that holistic sense, cost, innovation, control, sparing, operational efficiency, then it starts making a whole lot more sense to go down this path of disaggregation.
I think there's several challenges. I mean, the example I used for disaggregation recently was the unbundling of SFP modules. So once upon a time, you could only buy the specially blessed SFP modules from the vendor and no other modules would ever be permitted. And that was very inconvenient for customers who had a multi-vendor network. If you've got some, you know, brand A here and you've got some Juniper here and you've got some, you know, switches over here and you had to hold stock of all those SFPs. And that was deeply impractical because you just couldn't hold enough stock of all the different components. You know, if you had long range, short range, and if you had the different vendors, you had to have one for each vendor. So that is an example of disaggregation working to improve operational efficiency. But you're taking it a step further and saying, now think about the software that goes on top of these devices, that goes on top of our routers and our switches, which may be white box, but at least they got these unified APIs or the same software base. So Sonic and P4 and standard ways of programming the ASICs and consistent ways are much more converged around the Linux interface rather than some arcane CLI.
That is true. I think, pretty much the industry has converged around Linux as the native kernel around which to build infrastructure and operating systems. And then you basically layer on the functions that you want. So you could take maybe a merchant silicon box, you know, Tomahawk Trident class or whatever. And then layer on for top of rack, you have a certain set of capabilities. As you go towards the spine edge, you layer on additional capabilities. Maybe you use the same software stack for an edge device. Maybe you need some additional functions, but it's still the same software stack designed around the same interface. And it starts making your operational practices much easier in the longer run.
Because that means you can bring in tooling to sort of, you know, essentially run your networking infrastructure like the folks over on the server side are running their servers.
Yes, and that's been a huge driver, right? The ability, as more and more we have started seeing over time, convergence of, you know, at least in the data center to begin with, IT and networking, the ability to use common tooling is huge. And we see that a lot. For example, folks want to run the same kind of agents to provision their systems now in the networking side, which is as they do on the server side. And being able to do those kinds of things almost requires a disaggregated system, because disaggregated is open by nature. You need to have open APIs that you can bring on these things onto.
Yeah, Salt Stack, Ansible, you know, there's all sorts of different provisioning systems that people are choosing to use further up the stack. This is the debate where networking might be a few hundred devices in your system, but you might have thousands of servers, you know, and tens of thousands of VMs. And that's, so you have to focus on the fact that network isn't the tail that wags the dog anymore.
It's true.
Yeah. And that kind of drives that, you know, it's also important for vendors who don't want to have to develop these proprietary stacks, these agents like SaltStack and Ansible. They want to be able to just take them off the shelf and drop them right in, because they change a lot. The innovation, you know, now that you're using whatever is being developed by the companies behind Ansible and SaltStack, that means that you can drive, you don't have to drive that innovation and allocate resources to partnering and, you know, writing the code and validating the code. You just take whatever's on the market and drop it onto your boxes. I think those are also benefits of disaggregation.
Yeah, leveraging the efforts of the open source community and the ecosystem that is arising around it in terms of vendors who provide, you know, take these open source modules, provide support for it, and use them to improve your operations is certainly a huge movement. And the, you know, the only downside I would say right now is that there's too many choices almost. And hopefully as we go down the down this road, there will be some convergence. But, you know, at the moment, it's really, there's a lot of different technologies that you need to take into account. But the good thing is that there's a lot of options on to actually take these and work around. And you can pick pretty much what you need, what works for you, and operationalize around that.
Yeah, I often wonder about, you know, you say there's too much choices. I often wonder if that's just because we're not used to having choices. So for the last, you know, 20 years in networking, you've only had a handful of choices. And you could have any choice you like as long as it was black, you know, sort of the old Model T Ford joke. And we didn't get a lot of choices, and now we actually have choices. We might be being a little bit baffled, or we might find that difficult to navigate because we haven't actually had a lot of professional experience with it.
Yeah, and that may be true. A lot of it depends on your perspective, right? I think from a customer perspective, we do have a lot of customers coming and asking us, hey, what do we pick? You know, we've been doing some homegrown scripting, but there's all these different variations. There was Chef, then Puppet, then Ansible, Salt. There's new stuff coming all the time. You know, which languages, you know, should we invest in training our staff on Python? Go seems to be the flavor of the day. So I think there's a little bit of both. Certainly for a long time, we had very little choice. Now there is, the pendulum is almost swung to the other side.
Yes.
And that's where we see customers coming to us and saying, okay, give us, recommend something, stand behind it. And then, you know, if we decide we want to go in a different direction, then we'll make that call.
Yeah. So how is Juniper responding to these transitions then?
That's a very good question. I think if we look at this, there's two parts to really what we are doing to address this transition, right? There's a technology and product aspect to it. And then there is an operational side to things as well, which often we believe doesn't get thought through enough about. So speaking for the, you know, the product and technology part first, right? There's again, all these different variations, right? It almost helps to step back and look at define disaggregation, if you will, in a little more detail. The classic definition of disaggregation is, you know, take the whole software stack and decouple it from the hardware, right? So that's white box software. But if you look at what's happening today, especially with some of the hyperscalers, they are driving disaggregation in far more granular ways. For example, the network stack itself that sits on the box, you can think of it as comprised of three layers. There's a platform layer that deals with all the platform and the forwarding software on the silicon, etc. Then there is an infrastructure layer, which has all of the FIB management code in it. And then you have the control plane layer, which is all of the routing and the RIB portion to it. What we are seeing is disaggregation within the network stack itself. Sonic, for example, which is an open source initiative heavily backed by Microsoft and Alibaba and a few others, they are coming in and saying, we just want to replace the infrastructure layer with our own. So the FIB management will be the Sonic stack. Yeah. And we will just leverage whatever platform code and whatever, either open source or vendor routing planes are available. So that's that. There's that movement. So what it means from a vendor perspective for someone like Juniper is we are looking at designing a highly modular architecture. We've actually done that already,
yeah.
Which not only supports the classic, decouple white box with ONI support from the underlying platform, but also design our software in a manner that it's actually, you can take Junos apart in a way and say, I'm going to use Sonic, but I'll use the Junos routing stack. And I'll use all of the software that Junos and Juniper provides me for managing the platform. Or you can actually take the Junos stack and say, I want to build P4 systems out of this.
Yeah.
And if you look at how P4 is built, they're actually bypassing the entire control plane and a lot of the FIB management from the box and shifting it into a controller sitting outside the box.
Mm.
So there's only place enough in the P4 model for an agent that drives actually the platform layer. It just programs the silicon, and you need silicon APIs.
Right.
And we do that now. We provide P4 software support as well. So our technology strategy is hinged around creating a modular architecture where you can actually take these pieces apart if you don't need them in your use case and only use what you need. So that's one big part of it.
Yeah.
The second part from a technology and product perspective is open APIs, right? As we discussed before, disaggregation almost requires APIs, the ability to bring in third-party agents, either to replace
some capability. Well, the interface is between the mix here. I mean, you're talking here about, FRR and Sonic and ONI and, all these different things. And do we have to get these components to work together because all of those projects work independently? Now, back 5 years ago, that was all done inside of a company's walls. The towers would get together and meet in the middle and discuss how they're going to share data. And all these APIs and all these code architectures are very similar to what, we used to have years ago. So I think APIs are a natural extension of how do we bring these microservices, architecture inside of our networking devices together. Is that a fair assumption?
That is a fair assumption. If we look at how internally vendors have designed systems, there have always been internal API. They just weren't exposed. These modules were just far more tightly coupled. Microservices is the term that we refer to internally now. In the industry now. Some variation of that has always been the engineering practice and design practices have revolved around having components that you put together, upgrade individually, also potentially inside. That was a capability that was just not exposed outside.
Yeah.
And we're just seeing that happening a lot more now.
Yeah. Now, not everybody's taking advantage of these. So, APIs are great, but they're not necessarily something that every user takes advantage of. They're also things that other companies can take advantage of to do things with these devices.
That's right. For a large section of consumers, I would say, unless you're looking to do something unique, let's say, or trying to do something that it doesn't come out of the box for you, you're just fine using the software stack that comes on it. But if you are looking to maybe normalize your tooling across your server infrastructure and your, let's say, data center infrastructure, and you want a certain kind of agent on it for provisioning or telemetry and such, then you might want to actually bring that in. It may not be supported out of the box by any vendor. And that's when you want to start looking at how can I use the APIs to get that supported on this device.
Yeah. But the flip side of these APIs is that we're now able to use SDN controllers to drive our devices. We're not. The first generation of SDN, using the controller to drive not just one device, but all the devices as a coherent thing, was in the early days done by scraping the CLI. Now these APIs actually allow us to do SDN type stuff.
Yeah, I mean, there was a huge movement around just SDN for managing, you know, really started by some of the Google guys, the OpenConfig initiative, where they said, you know, we want vendor neutrality. We don't care what software you put as long as it supports OpenConfig models and API. And then we'll have a single way of managing the entire network. And that's, you know, disaggregation at the management plane, so to speak, where the controller just drives all of the provisioning. And so the intelligence of what to do really shifts to the controller. And we have then seen extensions of that and more control shifting to the controller, where it's not just doing the provisioning, but potentially doing the entire routing as well. And then just programming the FIB, which is the other end, the P4 model.
Yeah.
And then things in between.
Guru, I'd like to ask your perception of the, I guess I want to say stability of the API model, given that it's got to be so interactive. The third parties have to be able to work with each other. Are there standard definitions, standard concepts or constructs that people exposing APIs use so that systems can actually talk to each other without a lot of negotiation or having to define terms?
So we're not there yet. You know, I think the design principles around how API should be constructed and such are very well understood. But in the networking world, I would assert that we don't really have a standard set of API that is robust and agreed upon by everybody. For a wide variety of, you know, there are APIs. For example, OpenConfig is probably the closest thing we have to an industry standard when it comes to management plane API. In the data plane for switching, we see PSI and now P4, which is emerging. But again, as you know, it is not fully widely supported. Juniper, of course, supports both, and there are a few vendors that do that. But we haven't really seen full mass market adoption of these API layers. And for the control plane, you know, there is no API, right? There is no way for, there's now one emerging with gRibby that, again, the Google and that consortium is looking to standardize. But we don't really have a robust control plane API. Juniper has its own. We call it the Juniper Extension Toolkit, and we publish it on GitHub, but there isn't a standard in the industry. So I would say when it comes to APIs, there's emerging standards. In the management plane, OpenConfig is probably the furthest along. And in the data plane, you know, PSI and P4 are moving in that direction, but there isn't a universal one.
And just to note, the people behind PSI and OpenConfig and others, these aren't standards bodies like traditional standards bodies we might be familiar with, like the ITF. These are essentially open source consortiums,
Yeah, we're seeing a very different model now of how standardization is happening in this space, right? It's while a lot in the protocols, in the days of protocol development where ITF drove a lot of the standardization, we see not just ITF doing it now, but industry bodies are coming together and putting together through open source initiatives, standard definitions of APIs and trying to drive adoption that way. And, you know, I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. It definitely helps move things faster, but it also means that the whole effort towards standardization is far more fragmented, and which also leads to this to the situation that you have where there's a lot of different choices on what those APIs are. And I guess over time, we will see some emerge as maybe the clear winners, so to speak. But for now, it's very hard to tell which is the right model because it's also very use case specific. What you're trying to solve with maybe PSI or OpenConfig are slightly different things, right? You're trying to standardize around configuration in the management plane with the OpenConfig model. And you're trying to basically provide absolute control when you go down to P4 and PSI and those kinds of API layers. And which model to choose really depends on who you are and what capabilities you have to actually build things.
Okay. So if disaggregation sounds like it's sort of exploded, like separating software and hardware, and even within the hardware and the software itself, you can add and subtract components to your liking. So what's happening around the controller and orchestration layers to make sure all of these disaggregated components, as Greg mentioned, need to be rebundled again? What's happening in that space?
Yeah, with the advent of all these disaggregation variants, right, the focus has most certainly shifted to how to manage these devices now, right? Earlier, you know, you could argue that there was always some level of disaggregation between the devices and the network management layer, so to speak, that came from different vendors. But now what we are seeing is when you have all these different models of the device capabilities being exposed, you also, the importance of having a controller to manage that at the network level becomes huge. And so, again, depending on what level of disaggregation you have chosen, you need a controller to go with it, to manage it. What I mean by that is, for example, if you were to pick P4 as the way you want to do disaggregation in your network, which means you have decided to go program the data plane directly, then you don't have much software on the box to actually do the fib management and rib management. Now, that needs to be done with a controller. So what is that controller, right? So right now, ONOS is emerging as the controller to kind of fill that void. We are far away from having a production-grade controller that does all these use cases yet. Well, maybe not far away, but we're still not there yet. So that's the kind of controller you need to choose. On the other hand, if you are looking at maybe just taking white box software as is, a full stack from some vendor and getting hardware from some ODM, then you need a controller that can do all the traditional provisioning, maybe underlay management, setting up the IP fabric in case of a data center network, you know, EVP and VXLAN overlays, etc. Mm-hmm. And then you can actually go in with a controller, you know, such as Contrail that Juniper is providing. That's been a huge focus for us to ensure that as this trend, dual trend of disaggregation API starts emerging, we have the right network operation strategy in place, which is just focused around having a robust enterprise multi-cloud controller based on our Contrail technology that does all of that provisioning. So it really, again, the answer, as always, comes down to it depends on what you're trying to do in the network. I think if you were to ask me what's the predominant motion around, I would say right now, white box software decoupled from hardware with a robust controller to manage that network is primarily where we see most positive results in, most traction around. And that's where we are focused on having our Contrail enterprise multi-cloud controller with our software that can be put on our boxes or third-party boxes.
Now, that's a really key issue here, is that Juniper is actually embracing third-party boxes or white boxes and letting customers put the Junos on there. And Junos is, you know, one of the market-leading operating systems here. It is the one that is more reliable generally than, you know, grabbing something off open source or whatever. Is that fair commentary? Do you agree with that?
Well, I may be biased, but I 100% agree.
The thing is that Juniper does throw a lot of resources into that software. And in fact, in my understanding, Juniper has always put a lot of effort into making the software stable and reliable and bug-free. And a lot of people tell me, have confirmed that view, because when I talk to them, they say, you know, when I'm using other vendors, I get problems and, you know, all those sorts of things are problematic. But, you know, Juniper, they're very happy with it because the software is very stable and reliable. So I do, you know, apocryphally, that's what I hear.
Yeah. And, you know, our philosophy at Juniper has always been, if it makes sense for us to build and add value, then we are absolutely going to do it, whether it is silicon, our own software, or our own controllers. But if it doesn't make sense for us to do it, for example, top-of-rack switches, you know, quite candidly, we've been using white box hardware, so to speak, for the longest time. We just buy it from ODMs, merchant silicon chips, and we just put the Juniper stamp on it. And if someone comes along and says, no, I want to buy this from a third party, not from Juniper, we're happy to provide that, right? When it comes to the software stack, it's the same philosophy. There's a lot of baseline capabilities. If you're doing very simple networking, simple use cases, let's just say IP fabrics, etc., you can take something from the open source community. There are third parties out there that will support that software stack for you, and you know, more power to you, we'll support that. But if you need additional capabilities, if you need telemetry, if you need a robust stack that has been tried and trusted and proven, and you need support, importantly, around it as well, right? Because that's a key aspect of when you go down this disaggregation path, you need to think about procurement, support, all of these things. And if you want all of that, we'll happily come in and provide you that stack because, you know, we've got years of experience doing that, and we will support it on the third-party boxes as well if you need that to be the case.
So if I want to go out to an Actin or an EdgeCore or whoever and buy their boxes for whatever reason, I can put Junos on top of that and then have Contrail as the controller on top.
Yes, and we support that today, actually, since you mentioned Actin. That is, we do support a range of Actin Tomahawk-class boxes and then more Trident-class boxes as well, and more in 2019. And this can, you can choose, like you were mentioning at the beginning of the talk, you know, this whole bundling that needs to come in place. And that's really to solve the operational problem. So you can kind of have the best of both. You know, if you want to go down this path of disaggregation where you want to explore the economics, explore the thesis of agility and innovation, you can actually go buy a box from an Acton or Alpha, Jima, what have you, get Juno software on it, use our Contrail controller so you can manage the whole thing and then try it out. And if you feel like you need, you want the flexibility to replace parts of it as you go forward, we give you that ability, right? We will not stop you from bringing in a new controller or replacing the box with another one, et cetera.
Mm. And then if I'm disaggregating even more, if I decided for some reason I wanted to run free range routing or Quagga as my routing stack mm-hmm. on Junos on a white box hardware, could I do that?
Yes. So what we have done is very recently, we have disaggregated our routing stack. We call it the RPD, the Routing Protocols Daemon, from Junos itself. And we have containerized it. We sell it into the Sonic ecosystem, for example. So folks who have Sonic but don't want to use FRR or Quagga, let's say, can actually use our RPD. And we also do the reverse. If you want a Junos box because it has an excellent management interface and very robust infrastructure, but you choose to put an open source routing stack on it, you can do that. You can bring that in and, you know, we'll support all the Junos side of the software. You can do it even on our QFX boxes as well.
Hmm. Which is great, right? Because customers can feel like, you know, they're not stuck with a box that they don't want anything to do with, that now they've got a choices around how they approach this. You know, and there's a path out if that's what they want.
Yeah, and that's what we see most customers coming in and saying, right? For all the talk, candidly, about disaggregation, if you see who's actually done this, it's the big web guys, the hyperscalers, right? Some of the large tier one SPs, right? AT&T has been most prominent. You know, Verizon's been doing a lot of work as well. And then there's a few outside of the US too. But if you see that the long tail of the market hasn't really gone down this path to the fullest extent. And it's a big reason for that is the operational side of things, right? The procurement, the support, the system integration that's needed. How do you do, who does all of this for you? That ecosystem has not fully fleshed itself out. So either you build the resources and have the will to do it all yourself, that's option A, or you employ a third-party system integrator, right? Like the Red Hat for networking, so to speak, and there's a couple companies out there doing that. Or you go to the vendor and say, I want you to give me all of these pieces, but I don't want you to all tightly bundle them and package them all together so that I can't flesh the individual pieces apart. I want you to give me these disaggregated pieces in a manner that I can replace the part pieces down the line. And that's the one that we are doing, right? So we go in and tell our customers, okay, you know, we understand market forces and if we support them. So if you want to go down that path, we will support you. And if you want to start now with the full stack from us, you know, here's what we can do for you now. With our Contrail, with Junos, with our switches, and increasingly, not just switches, but also, you know, metro equipment as well, routers.
And you also have support for open source controllers as well. I know Tungsten Fabric is was a Juniper project, and then there's Open Daylight and others.
That's right. So, of course, Tungsten Fabric, which is basically the open source version of our Contrail Enterprise Multi-Cloud Controller. And then also, we've made a lot of investments in supporting both the ONOS controller in ONAP as well as ODL, right? There's a lot of work we do to expose the right kind of things like NetConf notifications, et cetera, P4 and OpenFlow APIs into the ONOS controller, et cetera. Again, because, you know, we, especially Juniper, we've always played in heterogeneous environments, right? Either with other vendors or with customers doing their own thing or now bringing in open source controllers. So it's very much a fabric of our design philosophy that we have to build open systems. We will not be able to go in and give our full stack all the time. We are happy to. We have a very robust full stack. But in scenarios where we don't have to do that, we will support whichever other controller you choose to bring in.
And the flip side of that is if I want to get my toes wet and maybe experiment with this without necessarily a lot of investment, there's open source tools available I can start playing with.
Yep. And this is where, you know, you touch upon a key point, which is, okay, I want to try this out, right? I want to dip my toes in. What do I do? And so we spent a lot of time thinking about how to enable the consumption of these technologies, right? Because we've been historically very good at producing technologies, open APIs, and all these different options, like I just mentioned. But what we did about a year and a half ago is we started really looking at how do consumers go and take these things. And so very recently, we released EngNet, which is our single hub for consuming APIs, for learning about APIs and automation, bringing in agents, disaggregated systems together, et cetera. So there's a lot of resources we've put. This is eng.juniper.net. You can go look at it. It's live now. And it's a single resource for consuming all of this. And so that is squarely intended towards those customers that want to get their feet wet but don't know quite how.
Okay, so you've put out EngNet as a kind of an educational resource for folks. I've always thought that this whole drive toward automation and disaggregation, there's kind of a chicken and egg problem for vendors because you want folks to embrace these automated systems, but they need to learn automation and which tools and which which path that they go down. And so, you know, how do you get started? How do you buy something before you know how to use it, et cetera? So it sounds like you're trying to kind of solve that chicken and egg problem by putting resources in people's hands.
Yeah, you know, we felt like, you know, when we looked at the state of the industry, especially around automation, around disaggregation, now it's been going on for a few years now. And we don't think there's a production side problem, right? There's plenty of technologies out there. You name it, all kinds of APIs, tooling, automation tooling, et cetera. But we felt like there was most definitely a bit of a consumption problem that people didn't quite know how to go about decide, you know, what's relevant for them. How do they even decide which choices to pick up? And then how do they learn how to use those choices and deploy them in their network? And that was the genesis for EngNet. So we built it as a single hub where you can come in and do a number of different things. One is you can learn about technologies. I refer to automation and disaggregation kind of together because there's so much, it goes hand in hand, really. Mm-hmm. There is a big learning component to EngNet. And in particular, there's something that we built called NRE Labs. Mm. And the idea is someone who wants a no strings attached, simple, free means of just launching a browser and learning about automation technologies, you know, Ansible, Python, all of those things. We actually provide that and we create the backend for it. And you can go learn about these technologies there. So you have that learning component. Of course, you have structured learning as well. If you want to come to Juniper for certifications and others, you can access that all as well through EngNet, but you don't have to. So that's one.
Yeah, and just to say, sorry to interrupt, but the NRE Labs part, just to let folks know, it's really easy, and it is just a web browser. You fire it up, you go in. They don't ask for your email. They're not trying to sell you anything. You can just go and start playing with labs and learning. It's pretty cool.
Right. It was purely intended as enablement for folks who want to learn about this. And it's really, there's not even a lot of or any Juniper-specific technologies that we are trying to push there, really. So that is one part of that. And then the other part is for folks who start developing a sense of, okay, I want to try some APIs. I kind of know what I want to do. Let me see what APIs are out there, especially with Juniper gear, for me to do interesting things. We have the full catalog of APIs of all manner, right? Management control data plane. It's all published on GitHub. So you have that component. And then we also have customers coming in and saying, we've heard of customer ABC doing these kinds of things on their router. They developed this application. They've developed this agent. Can we get access to that code? And so what we did was we built like an app exchange sub-site on EngNet where the community can actually contribute interesting software, interesting capabilities that they have put out there. Juniper will also contribute a lot of this stuff. We have a seed set of 20 or 30 applications we put out there. Everything from just, an upgrade tool. I want to upgrade my data center network. What's a good tool that I can use to do that, to more sophisticated stuff like, yeah, I want to offer new tunneling capabilities to offer over-the-top internet service using lightweight 4/6, right? This is an actual example that I'm picking. So it's out there. So there's everything in between also. And the idea is learn, you know, have a community to support folks who are interested in coming and learning about it, showcase APIs as well as applications that people can pick and customize to their environment. And so that was the idea behind EngNet, really help drive the consumption of these kinds of technologies within our customer base.
And I think the second generation of this is also monitoring and telemetry. We talked about how disaggregation exposes these APIs. And these APIs are now being used for monitoring and telemetry like never before. All of a sudden, we're able to see not just, you know, interface counts and stuff like that. We're actually seeing really advanced stuff and really starting to see a whole product ecosystem telling you what your networking is doing.
Absolutely. You know, telemetry is a huge part. We didn't talk about it enough, but this has become the front and center of how, you know, operations, network operations is changing really. For the longest time, we really had, you know, syslog and SNMP and CLI scraping and such. But especially with streaming telemetry coming along, and, you know, most vendors support that. I know Juniper certainly has extensive streaming telemetry support, both in our own format, the Juniper telemetry interface, as well as OpenConfig format. There's a lot of telemetry being exposed out of both hardware elements in switches and routers, as well as software entities. So there is that. You have the infrastructure for exposing all of the telemetry. But then the other side of it is, okay, this is great, but what do I do with it? Right. And this is where our a huge part of our focus as Juniper has been in the last year and a half or so, which is, you know, I think it wouldn't be too far off the mark to say that, you know, big data has finally arrived in networking with these technologies exposing this level of data granularity as well as volume.
Yeah.
And so now you're starting to see the ecosystem of consuming that big data. And Juniper, for our part, what we have done is we acquired a very interesting technology called AppFormix. We bought this company a few years back, and we have now embedded it throughout our controller ecosystem, right? It goes hand in hand with our Contrail controller. So it absorbs, it gives you the ability to collect all of this telemetry, store it in databases. It can export it to your data lakes if you want through things like Kafka buses. Or you can use our own tooling that we are developing on top of AppFormix to do visualizations, alarm chart, and then more interesting higher order capabilities like root cause analysis and syslog analysis, etc. So those kinds of capabilities are all being exposed through telemetry.
But to come back to our opening conversation around disaggregation, the interesting thing here, I think, is that not only does AppFormix work with Junos and Juniper devices, it works with anybody's because the APIs are open. So now Juniper can actually straddle entire solutions and not even just your own. It can be firewalls, security features, various network functions.
That's right. I think when we start talking of network monitoring, again, it goes back to, you know, we almost always play in heterogeneous environments as Juniper. And so all of the new capabilities that we have developed are multi-vendor. And so whether it is Contrail or AppFormix, the idea is to ensure that it works with other systems, can, in the case of AppFormix, absorb telemetry from other systems. Especially if some other vendor is supporting things like OpenConfig, it's much easier, of course, because, you know, we support that natively.
Yeah.
But even if not, then we are developing multi-vendor capabilities to absorb their telemetry and then do the rest of the higher order functions using our AppFormix infrastructure.
Yeah. But this is the flip side of disaggregation, is now the SDN controllers aren't limited to a single set of, you know, data plane devices. They can work with anybody's devices. And really, I think what we're seeing is this transition, you know, the disaggregation is the unbundling of existing technology stacks, and then we're rebundling them. So now we're seeing the emergence of Contrail, Tungsten Fabric, and tools like AppFormix that make it possible for us to build new solutions out of the existing technology. It's not, I think that's the thing I wanted to say about disaggregation is, yes, some people get into disaggregation, as we said at the start, which is to save money or to improve sparing or to improve operations by moving to a single, you know, multiple hardware platform, single software, or, you know, single software, specific hardware with multiple software, whatever it is, right? Or we can have Sonic and being or OpenR on these devices that give us new ways to program them, to program the forwarding plane. But then again, it also gives us opportunities to rebundle our networking stack into some new shape that makes sense for us.
Correct. And you're absolutely right with that term, you know, rebundling, because at the end, when a customer is trying to run a network, there may be a set of composite pieces underneath, potentially from different vendors in a disaggregated manner. But what they are looking to do is drive a solution, right, end to end. And so there has to be basically taking off all these different components and rebundling them, as you termed it, to where they can drive that coherent solution. And this is where we are coming in and saying, oh, we can do that. You know, if you want Contrail, for example, to be the interface to you, then that will be the interface. Underneath, you can have disaggregated components, right? Third-party hardware, for example, software even, on-box from third parties, etc.
Hmm. And I think that's important. So because this disaggregation and bundling is a natural business cycle, things expand and shrink over time. And sometime in the future, everybody, I think, will coalesce around SDN controllers, you know, pick orchestration solution, whatever you want to call it. I still think of it as an SDN controller because it's a very consistent language that I've been able to use for 5 years to talk about the same sort of thing. But this is all part of the same process. And what I think Juniper is saying here, and let me just try and read this back to you. Juniper's following the trend. You're going, as the market changes, you're following the disaggregation trend. You're moving into the software, the open APIs. You're embracing all of that. And then you're bringing the next generation stuff in. So Contrail and its family of products, which includes tools like AppFormix with observability and analytics engines and AI and ML type stuff, is laying out the direction of where Juniper is going to be.
That's right. And you summarized it very well. I think the operational aspect is key because there's, you know, these things are not in isolation, right? Disaggregation is a big trend, but it goes hand in hand with what it enables, which is the ability to mix and match, scale out systems, right? More systems built on cloud principles, right? Scale out, open source, open API, etc. And you need the ability to actually operationalize it. And this is where things like Contrail come into the picture. And that's what we are trying to do here. Make sure that running the network becomes easy. And in many cases, if you don't want to go underneath the covers and actually you know, do things yourself even, you can just stay at the topmost layer, which is Contrail, and have it take care of all of the networking for you underneath. But if you are so inclined to go underneath as well and mix piece parts together, you can do that as well.
Well, I think that's a good place to wrap up. Guru, thank you for your time, and thanks Juniper for sponsoring today's show. Are you social? Are you online? And are there resources you want to point folks to?
Yeah, absolutely. There's a ton of resources. You know, for a start, we talked about EngNet, which is what we've built to help our customers consume all of these technologies. Mm-hmm. So that's eng.juniper.net. And NRE Labs and other things are all accessible through that. So that's a key resource. You know, I'm on social media as well. Jishanoy is my handle on Twitter. You can follow me there. And I keep talking about a lot of these technologies and trends there all the time. Yeah, there's, of course, on juniper.net. If you just look up by Contrail, you will see all of our Contrail Enterprise Multi-Cloud and AppFormix resources as well. So there's a ton of stuff out there. And we hope that folks will actually log on to EngNet in particular, sign up and start making use of all the good stuff that is out there.
Yeah, if you're ready to learn, check out EngNet, check out NRE Labs. We'll make sure to have links to those in the show notes that accompany this podcast on packetpushers.net. Thank you, Guru, for being here, and thank you to our listeners. You can find this and many more fine, free technical podcasts along with our community blog at packetpushers.net. You can follow us on Twitter at packetpushers, find us on LinkedIn, like us on Facebook, and rate us on iTunes. And remember that last but not least, too much networking would never be enough.